brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Barbara McLeod is our guest in this third and final hour today on this Thursday edition. We'll be live tomorrow. We'll be live Christmas Eve on the Sunday show. We're talking about the film Apocalypto and the Mayanists, that's the people that study it, I guess the subdivision of anthropology, who got upset by the film and then claimed that the Mayan didn't like it, though the Mayans we've talked to and that my guests have talked to did like the film. And it's as accurate as you can get trying to condense all these different cultures into, I guess you could say, a two and a half hour film. And Barbara McLeod, who's an anthropologist, is here with us. She was telling us how she got into caving, how she got into anthropology, and she was continuing and then leading up to getting involved in Apocalypto, what she did there in the post-production, trying to make sure that they got the language just right. And later she'll be speaking in that language with us. So please continue.
Okay. Well, I think that I got into the Maya through my very strong interest in caving and my exposure to these wonderful caves down in Belize. And I came back after that first trip down there as a Peace Corps volunteer. My job was to study the caves for the archaeology department, help them develop a national parks program, and also report back to the archaeology department about the artifacts that I was finding in caves. So that was a wonderful exposure, and it also allowed me to have firsthand evidence for human sacrifice because the caves are full of it. So after 5 years of this kind of work, I moved to Austin and went to graduate school and got a master's degree and then a PhD in anthropology. And I started out in archaeology, but I actually slid over onto the linguistic side of the fence because I've always been very, very interested in languages. And the Mayan languages fascinated me. I had a lot of exposure to different speakers of Mayan languages in Belize.
Haven't you pioneered a lot of discoveries and developments now with your knowledge of the language?
I have, not only in the studies of the languages, but also in the studies of the hieroglyphs. Because I was one of the early pioneers in the linguistic approach to hieroglyphic decipherment, identifying the little bits and pieces of affixes that you see on hieroglyphs, and determining not only that they were verbs, but understanding what kinds of verbs they were. And so that really helped to break open the understanding that we have absolute grammatical integrity in the hieroglyphic script. It represents an ancient spoken language. So that's been what's most fascinated me. I'm, of course, very, very interested in what they said, but it's how they said it that really excites me the most, because that's my frontier and that's my major contribution.
Who is this art teacher at UT that's so mad at Mel Gibson?
Well,
I mean, you know her.
Know her, actually, and she's a friend of mine. You know, we haven't had a chance to talk about Apocalypto.
Yeah.
And sparks might fly if we did, but I suppose maybe there'll be an opportunity in the future. No, she's very serious about her study of the Maya. She's got a lot of experience. She's an art historian. She was a graduate student here at UT, and she's kind of come up through the ranks and studied with a lot of well-known expert people, and now she's a professor here at UT.
But it seems what she's saying is, I just don't like the view this gives. She doesn't really say anything he's doing is inaccurate. Oh, well, a cave drawing they show is from an earlier period with a head being chopped off and blood spewing. She doesn't deny it isn't from that whole culture down there. She just nitpicks, you know, how he had to condense these cultures together in 2.5 hours. You know, you can't show 3,000 years of history in 2.5 hours.
Well, you can't even take a chronological slice of history all from one period and show it all in 2.5 hours. There's just too much to do. And I think my sense of it, not having talked to Julia directly, is that what she's most reacting to, her knee-jerk reaction, is to the violence, that she personally can't stomach it.
But that's like the pagans who call me and say there wasn't human sacrifice in Europe. Our religion doesn't have that at its roots, and I'm sorry it does. And I'm just tired of denial. I mean, this is childlike denial. We'll be right back. Long segment coming up. Plenty of time to get into Apocalypto. Mel Gibson, deeply involved in the film, obviously. She tells you some behind-the-scenes stories as well.
It's here.
After a year in production and traveling to distant lands, my new film, Terror Storm, is complete. Shocking declassified government documents prove that Western governments are orchestrating terror attacks against their own populations as a pretext to enslave them. Terror Storm proves that not only was 9/11 an inside job, but the attacks of 7/7 in London were carried out by British intelligence. Terror Storm chronicles the lies that took us to war in Iraq, a White House program to disseminate fake news, NSA spying, secret police torture, the latest 9/11 information, and much, much more. Terror Storm is the definitive guide to the history of government-sponsored terrorism. It's an anthology of government crimes. Terror Storm is a film that everyone who wants to be truly informed must see. Get your copy today at Infowars.com or PrisonPlanet.com or by calling toll-free 1-888-253-3139 or watch it right now online at PrisonPlanet.tv.
Are terrorist cells or prime terror targets located near you? Where are military bases and hazardous waste sites located? How do you find the best area for solar, average rainfall, fish contamination advisories, and major transportation routes? In the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA, you will find the information you want with over 50 interactive parameters that you control. Find everything from housing prices and taxes to brewing environmental catastrophes. Locate billion-dollar disaster-prone areas, the safest cities, ideal solar locations, and much, much more. Complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution, full-color maps and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis that you need. Get this hard-to-find information by ordering Prudent Places USA now for only $29 plus shipping and handling by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
Attention, attention everyone! A brand new invention just released. It's called Wrist Ease, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. Wrist Ease comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse, or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, Wrist Ease is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. Wrist Ease is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. Wrist Ease provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and makes a great stocking stuffer. Honest, Wrist Ease provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order Wrist Ease now at wristease.com. That's Wrist Ease, W-R-I-S-T-E-A-S-E, wristease.com. Once again, wristease.com.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Governments of men and women more often than not engage in mass human sacrifice by war, by the great arena, by huge prisons and public executions. That's a form of sacrifice. There is no doubt. The Iraq War, and I've said this many times, is a form of sacrifice. In fact, I've read, going back to the 100-year war between the French and British, where the royals are all cousins, and they're writing to each other saying, we've got problems with our economy, we've got uprisings, let's have a war. Where it's spelled out they're having wars, as George Orwell said in 1984, really against their own populations more than it is against a neighbor. It's a way of unifying the tribe, getting their minds off ideas, because elites know that the average person wants to wage war, even subconsciously, wants to move up, wants to take over, wants to be dominant, some people more than others. And so they use wars as a way to channel that energy out of the country against a foreign enemy. In fact, you were telling me off air last time we spoke about you guys talking to Mel Gibson talking and, you know, discussions of this is just like, and he also said that on national television, this is like human sacrifice over in Iraq and what's happening there.
Well, he did express that opinion several times as we were going through the work in the sound studio. We didn't have an opportunity to talk about it at length because we're just taking short breaks, but he truly believes that the war in Iraq is a kind of profane mass sacrifice.
Well, and look at our leaders. Look at Bush and Skull and Bones. So this is serious ritual. Look at Bohemian Grove. In fact, I have a mainstream news article today about huge secret societies they're now discovering all over the Western world. Helmut Schmidt, German chancellor, wrote in his autobiography, Men in Powers, that, oh, I do rituals at a grove in Germany, but I love doing the rituals in California. That's my favorite place. Why do you think there's this need, especially in people that seek real power, to be involved in so much ritual, i.e., even if it's like Anton LaVey? I was watching a video clip of him the other day, and he said, oh, we don't really kill people here at the Church of Satan. We do mock sacrifices. Very interesting.
Well, I think whether you do mock sacrifices or real sacrifices, one of the primary purposes of ritual is to consolidate power. I mean, you do it through magic. You do it through bringing power in from elemental sources, and you use magic to consolidate and concentrate it and channel it toward the desires of the community.
Well, I mean, that's my point, and that's why you're here, and we appreciate you being here, is it's not just about Apocalypto. Mel Gibson, you know, in his films, tries to point out real things that have happened, or, you know, to take real things and consolidate them into, you know, some type of fantasy realm so it's more easily understood. But sacrifice and mock sacrifice and all in ritual runs our society, but somehow in modern Western culture, you're laughed at like you're crazy if you even talk about it existing.
Well, I think it's clear that it did exist worldwide, and that in large measure human sacrifice does seem to have faded. I can't promise that it's not going on somewhere, but we have a lot of evidence that in times past, a century ago, and certainly 1,000 years ago, that there was a lot of it going on. And I mentioned one purpose of it, and another purpose of it I think is just simply it's that a lot of people conceive of the relationship with God or gods as being one of giving and taking, that if they ask the deities for something, they give something in return. And a lot of people do believe that that something has to be something precious and valuable, and the closer it is to one's own flesh and blood, the better, the more valuable it is.
Well, it's like I'm a Christian, and every night before dinner we say a prayer. I'm thanking God for the food.
That's right. Well, I think that that is a spiritualization of that relationship. What I'm talking about in sacrifice, we're talking about, I think, two concepts. One is concrete, and the other is spiritual. You concretize something, or you spiritualize something. If you're going to have a concretization of this relationship, you physically give something. Now,
it's making the spiritual realm real. I mean, it's bringing it into the real world.
Well,
and I guess giving your own blood.
Giving your own blood. I mean, here's an example from the Native American traditions, is the Sundance. You might be familiar with it, the Lakota Sundance.
Yes.
Where they dance around the pole, hook themselves by the chest with eagle talons.
And get hauled up.
Dance around the poles. They either get hauled up, or they just simply dance and pull back on the pole until the claw pulls loose, or they take strips of flesh off their arms. And it's an offering of one's own flesh, blood, and suffering to God for the sake of the community. And at least
it's a purification, isn't it?
It is a type of purification, but it's for the benefit of the whole community. And I know.
Don't they stop it once they have an hallucination or a vision?
Not necessarily. I don't know the whole detail of it. First of all, women don't participate in it. But I have known Sundancers. I've talked to Sundancers about it. And I mean, one of the reasons that they did it during the Vietnam War was so that their own Indian people who were over there in Vietnam could come home safely, not be killed. That they did it in order to have blessings upon their soldiers. So they use it for all kinds of reasons to serve the community. Now, this is something that I say, you know, if you're going to give something of yourself, well, that's a different story than taking the life of something else. But they share a commonality. It's this idea of giving something precious. And so I think human sacrifice and animal sacrifice originated with this idea of giving something precious. If you look at the story of Abraham and Isaac, for example, Abraham was asked by God to give the most precious thing of all, and that was his son, his firstborn son.
And it was,
course,
a test, though, when he...
It was a test. It was a test because, you know, when it, you know, push came to shove, then a substitution was made. There was a ram caught in a thicket, and Abraham was told by an angel that the ram would serve as a substitution. So I think that that was the charter for animal sacrifice in the ancient Hebrew tradition.
We were talking earlier about Jesus on the cross really ending what we think of as, you know, at that point, modern human sacrifice. You know, then it was modern with his final sacrifice.
Well, in the ritual sense of human sacrifice, yes, absolutely. I think that people who become Christians and who truly embrace Jesus Christ as their Savior and really, really transfer that bloodlust that they have to that expiation that goes with Christ's death on the cross, no longer have that bloodlust or want to channel it toward human sacrifice. Now, this may be stepping on a few toes, but if you look at the Crusades or you look at the Inquisition, you can see that even a church built around this very pure and beautiful idea can still go astray. So, we have that bloodlust, and even though we may feel it's contained within an institution that's built upon this pure transformation, that we still, at the edges, have the ability to have it fall apart.
Well, I think it's about the cult of power that Orwell writes about in 1984, where O'Brien's torturing Winston, and he says, "We are the priest of power." Mm-hmm. And really, I think human sacrifice, once it grew from just, sacrificing an animal because this is your meat, you're going to burn it, you don't get to eat it, that is, quote, giving something, to capturing your enemies and sacrificing them for terror and control. At the end of the day, it's just about that exercise of authority and everybody seeing that authority.
Well, and I still think that there's an important line to be drawn between giving something directly of oneself, one's own person, one's own body. You can do it through ascetic practices. You can do it through the sweat lodge, for example, which is something I've participated in, where you go and sit with the community people and just sweat and sweat and sweat until you can hardly stand it anymore. And you pray and smoke the pipe. And there is a tradition within the sweat lodge of giving flesh as well. I've never done that, but I understand it. I think that that's on one side of the line, and taking the life of something else is on the other side. And yet I do see that there's a bridge between them psychologically, and I understand how one is a step away from the other.
How did it develop from all your studies, from this, societies 4,000 or 5,000 years ago in Mesoamerica? How did it grow up to the Aztecs sacrificing thousands at a pop?
Well, I can only guess that it's just, when bloodlust still exists and it cannot be spiritualized, in other words, the tradition is simply to maintain it concretized, and as the population grows and as the need grows, and here we have a situation of a very large population, in the case of the Aztecs, an expansionist population. I mean, they were into empire building. They wanted to conquer territory. They wanted to conquer other people.
And empires tend to be the most bloody societies.
They wanted to take tribute from everywhere that they could conquer or make their influence known. And so their needs grew as well. In the case of very large populations who are very dependent upon sunshine and rain to grow their crops, and, friendly relationships between themselves and the supernatural is more and more vital as the population gets larger and larger, because they become more vulnerable to any failure of those things. So if you have, for example, a drought and too much sun and the crops dry up, and you don't look at it as a scientific issue, but you look at it as a out-of-balance supernatural issue, then you're going to have to come up with some solution that propitiates the gods. And I really think that it's got to be tied into that in some way. And
it sounds like global warming being caused by the sun, but they're going to tell us it's being caused by cars and give us a global tax, which has nothing to do with stopping global warming.
Well, my personal view about global warming, and I don't consider myself an expert, is that there must be a very strong natural underpinning to it. But there's no doubt that we also contribute to it as human beings, because human beings are, we're...
But a lot more than cars is just impervious cover.
Yep.
I mean, the heat sink of concrete.
Absolutely.
And that's just scientific studies.
And it's also what we do to our rivers, as an aside from global warming. It's what happens in the way that we develop rivers, such that when we do get a lot of rain, then those rivers are out of control, because the rainwater doesn't have a chance to soak into the surrounding earth. It just creates flooding downstream. So we are, we're kind of a bull in a china shop in the way in which we deal with our environment. There's no question about that. We need to wake up about all of those things and become more environmentally sensitive.
Absolutely. We're going to break here in a moment. When we get back, let's get into Apocalypto, what you did, making sure that the language is correct. I want to go over some of that language. And then I know there's several other issues you want to discuss. Also, I want to talk about the Mayans that did see this film. Mel Gibson showed it to Mayan groups. He showed it to Native American groups. He showed it to diverse groups. And they liked it. and didn't seem bad, didn't think it was showing them as bad, just thought that it was showing a culture and then showing different elements of that culture. And then we'll discuss the parts that are accurate, the parts that you think are inaccurate, on the other side of this quick break with Barbara McLeod, our guest. This is the GCN Radio Network. The websites are Infowars.com, Infowars.net, and PrisonPlanet.tv.
Ted Anderson from Midas, December 21st, 2006. Gold, $621.20. 1 ounce gold coins are at $640.76. $322.93 for half, $161.47. For quarter ounce coins at $640.76. $322.93 and $161.47. 1971, Nixon closes the gold window. Fiat currency, 1920s. The German mark explodes from 75 to 23 trillion. 1995, gold doubles against the Mexican peso. 1997, gold increases 82% over the Indonesian rupee. In 1998, gold jumps two-thirds over the Russian ruble. 2002, the Argentine peso loses a fifth of its value to gold. 2006, the last superpower, the USA's mighty dollar, loses over half to gold and other raw goods. Could government let this happen? Without immediate backing, how much will it lose? Midas has Nick Farishev's report covering the loss of purchasing power, fat tail events, bull market economic vulnerabilities, and gold-oil relationship. You've lost half of your purchasing power. Call 800-686-2237 before the rest disappears. That's 800-686-2237.
Terrorism, terrorism, chemical attacks, dirty bombs, fallout, biological attack, anthrax, and to top it all off, duct tape and plastic. Alarming words for our time. But how do you protect your family during such a crisis? The video sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout was developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government. Anyone can follow the simple instructions. It's presented by a housewife as they walk you step by step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. If you're not the type who waits till it's too late, then you need the video sheltering in place. Get the critical information you need now for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 and tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
David J. Smith for Newswatch Magazine. Did you know that communism has stated that America would not jump from capitalism to communism, but our elected leaders would pass laws to socialize America, and one day we would wake up and have socialism, communism, and not even know how it happened? Have we seen this very type of socialization of America over the last 60 years? We've been pushed far down the slippery slope of socialism, communism, and don't even know it. Just as Nikita Khrushchev said, we'd like to help you understand how these things are coming to pass by offering you an absolutely free one-year subscription to Newswatch Magazine. Just call our toll-free number, 1-800-516-8736. That's 1-800-516-8736 for your subscription. Call now. Operators are standing by to receive your call.
The statistics are heart-wrenching. According to the CWC, of the 43 million people who have served in the major wars, from the Revolutionary War to the Gulf War, 3 million never made it home alive. Most likely, each one of us can say we either knew someone who served or know a brave soul who is currently serving our country. Now there is a unique way to pay tribute to the courageous men and women who spend their lives protecting our freedom and to those who have lost their lives doing so. Davis Products is offering high-quality, solid-cast aluminum memorial markers for your American flag. Each memorial marker is specifically designed to represent one of 15 wars. All markers include a 3/8 inch pointed and threaded aluminum rod, painted and highlighted for an appearance that is unforgettable. What better way to pay homage to our enlisted loved ones? Davis Products memorial markers are only $9 a piece and can be ordered by calling 814-827-4946. That's 814-827-4946. Or visit davis-products.com. That's davis-products.com.
This hour ends in about 36 minutes. We will take just a few calls that are specifically about Apocalypto or about anthropology at 1-800-259-9231. But specifically on topic, on issue, please, callers. Barbara McLeod, anthropologist, worked on Apocalypto. Let's get into Apocalypto and let's get into some of the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Okay. Well, first of all, I worked on Apocalypto this fall. My first trip to Los Angeles was in the middle of September, and my fourth trip was at the beginning of November. And I know they wrapped up all of their post-production stuff about the middle of November, and I was on call here in Austin during that period until they actually turned it all over to Disney, who distributed it.
So they went right up to the wire.
They sure did. And I think that they would have liked to have more time. So they were really scrambling during that last phase, and we were doing 10, 12-hour days during that period because there was just so much to be done. They brought in all of the principal actors, brought them in from all over. A lot of them were living in Canada or elsewhere in the United States, and they had everybody in, including Rudy Youngblood, who is the star of the film.
And he's from Texas.
He's originally from Belton, Texas.
Yeah.
Now he's living in Los Angeles. But
most of the folks are from Mexico.
There's a lot of them from Mexico, but there are several of them who are living in Canada, Toronto.
Like Zero Wolf, a really scary guy.
Raul Trujillo lives in Toronto. I'm pretty sure it's Toronto.
He's good.
He's very good. He's been in a number of other films playing Native American people. He was in New World, and he was in Black Robe, which was a really interesting film that came out about, I don't know, 20 years ago now. And you know, they're all really great people. I had a great interaction with all the principal actors, and I really like and respect them all. Then they brought in a lot of other actors, people that just, you know, were hired for a show to come in and do voiceovers.
And this is Mel Gibson going back and trying to get the language just right.
Doing the best he can to get the language just right. Now, I was there to try to nitpick about the language, and if it had been my druthers, I would have nitpicked a little more, but we were dealing with a serious time
under the
constraint. Absolutely. But my job, since they were doing overdubs anyway, and the main reason was not so much that the language wasn't pronounced correctly, but that they had bad audio from the original production. And some of it had to do with the fact that there was just distortion or noise on top of the dialogue that they couldn't get out.
Yeah, you're out in the jungle.
They had a speedboat nearby in one case when they were filming some of the critical dialogue, and they couldn't wipe it out. They couldn't get rid of it. Or they just had bad audio, or in some cases Mel didn't feel that they had adequate emotion in the voice. That he was really, I was fascinated with his attention to the emotional quality of this film in every respect. And he was very, very, very on top of everything that was said and how it was said. And, you know, and I would sit there and go through these scenes or watch these scenes, 10, 15, 20 times. Well, the actors would overdub those lines again and again and again, and first of all, they would have to lip sync them, and there's a method in ADR, automatic dialogue replacement, where they cue you so that you know when you start, and it's visual and auditory, the method that they use to cue people. Of course, people that have a lot of acting experience are good at lip syncing, but then they can digitize it and lock it in more precisely. It's very interesting to have audio digital.
Yeah, you can't tell.
Digital.
They did a great job.
They did a great job. They really did. But what he wanted to see and feel was the emotion in the voice. And that was the primary reason that we repeated and repeated and repeated, is that he was just there thinking, that's too flat, or that's too loud, or that doesn't quite fit with the emotional tenor of...
Listen, I don't think Stanley Kubrick could have made this film. It is extremely powerful. I took some friends with you that I've seen it twice now, and they said, yes, this was total immersion. And plus, it's shot in this new super high digital quality. It's not film, folks. And, I mean, you really get immersed in this.
So, I was there giving linguistic cues and helping people, since we were overdubbing anyway, helping people improve the pronunciation, get some of those glottalized consonants in there. And also, we were adding some lines. There were a number of lines that were added off camera. If actors were not facing the camera, then we could have them saying new things that kind of helped to fill in some gaps in the story. And I should also say that I was working with a young Yucatec man who lives in Los Angeles. His name was Nicolas Pott. And Nicolas and I think we became friends. We hit it off. We really liked working together. And so I consider us a team. It was Barb McLeod and Nicolas Pott, or vice versa. We were the Yucatec language consultant team for the ADR.
Well, stay there. We're going to break, and I want to come back, and you're going to read two different scenes or subparts of scenes directly from the script in English, then in Yucatec. And this is amazing stuff. And then some more behind-the-scenes stories about the post-production of the film Apocalypto. Still number one in the theaters, last time I checked, going into its third week.
We're on the march. The Empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
This is Jack Blood with the Genesis Radio Network, and I have an urgent message for our listeners. The mass media keeps telling us that we are the richest, most powerful economy in the world. If this is true, why can't we pay our bills? Why is the United States the world's largest debtor nation? The truth is that we are in the worst debt bubble in our nation's history. When the bubble bursts, will you be able to feed your family? When the inevitable crash occurs, will you be ready? Call Whitehurst International at 1-888-892-6238. That's 1-888-892-6238 for the following two free reports. U.S. Debt Bubble Red Alert and Real Estate Crash. Call 888-8-XANADU. That's 1-888-8-XANADU. Ask for George.
Do you know the secret to reading 1,000% faster? That's right, the secret that could allow you to read 10 books in the time it takes others to read one. Hi, I'm Steve Glick, CEO of Infinite Mind. I'd like to send you a free demo of this secret, developed by a leading expert in brain function. Experience with this free demo the secret to reading 1,000% faster. Call now to try this demo absolutely free. Imagine how reading 10 times faster could help your whole family. Kids do better in school, teens can actually score higher on their college entrance exams, and busy adults can gain that ever-important edge at work. This free demo is only available for a limited time. Call now. Just think how reading 10 times faster could improve your life and the life of your family.
Call now to try this demo absolutely free. Dial 1-800-771-8424. That's 1-800-771-8424. 1-800-771-8424.
Are you concerned about the high cost of prescription drugs? Since January of 2006, RxDrugCard.com members have saved an average of $33 per prescription filled. That's over 46% savings. The average savings for generic drugs was over 71%. RxDrugCard.com is the only major discount prescription drug plan that offers a price lookup page, so you can get an idea of your discounted price before you enroll. RxDrugCard.com is for anyone who pays for their own prescriptions. There are no age restrictions, all prescriptions are covered, and 95% of all pharmacies in the U.S. participate, including Walmart, Walgreens, CVS Pharmacy, and many more. With RxDrugCard.com, you will save immediately with no messy forms or paperwork. Membership fees start at only $4.50 per month and include a 30-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Visit us at www.rxdrugcard.com or call us at 888-216-2461. That's 888-216-2461. Do it today.
I've been so busy the last few years making other films, I've never gotten my first seven documentaries on DVD. Well, now, Matrix of Evil, Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports Exposed, The Masters of Terror, America Destroyed by Design, my first film, made in 97, and the Police State Trilogy, three DVDs, Police State 2000, Police State 2 The Takeover, Police State 3 Total Enslavement, they are all on one, in one box now. They're all there in one place for you. And so you kept asking for them on DVD. Here they are. They're ready. They're available at InfoWars.com or PrisonPlanet.com via the Safe Secure Online Shopping Cart or by calling toll-free 1-888-253-3139. We also have my new film, Terror Storm, The History of Government-Sponsored Terror Exposed. And it has 68 minutes of extras from the 9/11 Neocon Agenda Symposium on 9/11 in L.A. on the roughly two-hour film. And, of course, we carry American Freedom to Fascism, a lot of other great books and videos, 9/11 Mysteries, Demolitions, Part 1, America's Secret History. There's a huge video bookstore and video store now on Infowars.com or by calling 888-253-3139. Don't forget PrisonPlanet.tv. Until the end of the year, you get 5+ months, almost half a year free when you sign up for a year, or a month, $5.95. All my interviews in studio, like the one you're hearing right now, all the local TV shows, my book, Paul Watson's book, all 15 of my films, in super high bandwidth down to low bandwidth for PrisonPlanet.tv. Members, be sure and take advantage of that now. Going back to my guest, and then we do have a few callers here that we'll be able to go to who are on topic as well, Demetrius and Bill and others. Let's continue with getting into the film, and then also some of the criticisms by some of the, I guess, liberal anthropologists, if you want to call them that, criticizing Gibson, saying it's too violent, it's scary, when in your letter you wrote to us countering them, you said he didn't show them ripping people's jaws off in ritual torture. He didn't show, you know, a lot of the things. I mean, is it accurate that they stuck people's heads on these poles, Barbara?
Well, there certainly is some evidence that they did things like that, that they piled them up. I mean, we've got archaeological evidence of platforms that are completely embellished with carved skulls. And I've seen, from the work that I've done in caves, piles of skulls that were undoubtedly decapitation sacrifices. And
you can see that in the vertebra, the chop.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you find the rest of the body with no head lying around in the cave elsewhere. I've seen some places like this. In fact, in the case of that cave, I was the first person to see all of this stuff and document it. I actually found the pile of skulls that they had walled off in the corner.
Now, you told a story Sunday on the show about Mel Gibson's in there getting his hair cut. He's about to go to a TV interview, and there's the young girl cutting his hair. She didn't get sick seeing the heart-chopping thing over and over again. Tell that story.
Well, he had to get his hair cut before the first Diane Sawyer interview. It looked fine to me, but he felt it was too long, so he had his personal hair cutter come into the studio while he was doing his directing. We did not take a break for it. He just kept right on working, and she showed up and came in with all her toolkit. And the first thing he does is start strutting around. He has a hard time sitting still anyway. He's just a high-energy guy. So he takes off his shirt with a flourish and struts around in the studio with his shirt off, which I thought was just great, you know.
He's about to get his hair cut.
Yeah, he's about to get his hair cut, and she has this lovely black cape that makes me think of Zorro. And so he grabs this cape and wraps it around himself as he's strutting around, and the cape is floating and swirling and swishing. And then he sits down in the chair, and she's cutting his hair as we are working through the scene with the high priest up on the temple ripping people's hearts out. And, of course, in that scene, you don't actually see the cut. What you see is the knife falling. You hear the victim gurgling and screaming.
You know, the media called this the most violent ever. This is nothing.
They certainly could have made it worse, and there's a lot of Hollywood stuff out there that is visually much more shocking.
Oh, yeah, where they show the
in Apocalypto. I think they really toned it down, and as you mentioned, there are cases of ritual torture that we know about that are documented for the ancient Maya that were not shown in the film at all. They could have made it a lot more graphic than they did.
Well, on the point I'm making, though, from that story is that the young girl cutting his hair didn't get upset.
Yeah, well, she certainly didn't miss a step in what she was doing. She was watching what was going on. She's also looking obviously at Mel's head, so she doesn't do a bad job, but she was completely exposed to the whole thing and just carried on.
Can we tell the story about the parrot? Or I mean, don't say what he said, or maybe we shouldn't.
We
didn't make the film. There was going to be a parrot in the film. And
there is a parrot in the film, actually, but all he does is go, or something like that, you know. But he was going to say something else that is connected to the arrest, and I'm not sure. I can tell you what it was in Yucatec that the parrot was going to say, and that anybody out there that knows Yucatec can figure out what it was.
Okay.
The word is chuk-im. Chuk-im. And it was going to go, chuk-im, chuk-im. And I trained one of the actors to say this, you know, so it was actually recorded. It was recorded by a couple of different people in case they decided
to. Let me give him a hint. It has something to do with something he said to a police officer.
That's right, exactly.
Okay, we're going to leave it there.
We're going to leave it right
there.
We'll
see if people can puzzle out the riddle now.
But anyway, when the haircutter was done and she was packing up to leave, Mel said, well, you know, you didn't see any of this stuff. This was all, you know, secret stuff. And I kind of chimed in and said, yeah, right, you didn't see any heads rolling down the steps or hearts being offered to the gods and things like that. And she just kind of laughed. And then we all laughed about it. Everybody that was in the room laughed about it. as, you know, and then, you know, it wasn't even clear that she wasn't supposed to talk about
any other good behind the scenes stuff.
Well, it was all good. I mean, there was just a lot of...
I mean, it's no secret that Mel Gibson, his dad's been on the show, and the family's come to some of the events. I've met a lot of the family, but, I mean, obviously Mel Gibson in a Playboy interview on the Tonight Show talked about the New World Order. He's made films about the New World Order. I mean, Mel Gibson knows all about the New World Order, but not just Mel Gibson. You said that on the set, there was a lot, you know, just in the side, you know, discussions about the New World Order.
There was a little bit. There wasn't time for a lot of anything.
Well, I guess the stories you told me sounded like a lot. You know,
it wasn't a lot, but it was enough to get, you know, to get a sense of how Mel feels about things. One of the other things that I contributed to, which ended up not being in the film, was that after the captives were taken and tied to those bamboo poles, so they could be marched, do that forced march through the forest for a couple of days, I suggested that, well, maybe we should have them shouting curses and things at these people that are obviously, you know, out to really screw them over. I mean, they've already devastated the village, killed half the people. And so I helped, Nicolas and I kind of collaborated and came up with a bunch of curses, you know, things that Mayas say to one another when they're either when they're joking around or when they're truly angry at one another. And so we cooked up a bunch of these things in Yucatec. But it's clear.
Before we read these, well, I mean, go ahead and finish. I also wanted to ask about the different screenings that were shown to Mayan, but go ahead.
Just to wrap it up, I think that once they laid the score down, they decided that they couldn't really use that material. That there were other things that I helped to develop that ended up not being used, and I really think it has to do with just the competition with the score, and they decided that the score should just dominate.
And it's already a jam-packed movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just sumptuous visually and auditorially. There's no empty space in it at all. And that's one of the things that's so stimulating about it, and I think that's one of the things that has, in fact, angered the people who don't like it, is because they still are sucked into it. They're
very turned on to it. Well, exactly. I've been on my TV show and been talking about the Aztecs cutting out hearts to Mayans. I get a call going, "You're a liar. That's colonial propaganda. They didn't do that." But I've been to Chichen Itza with a ball playing court with hundreds of skulls carved in, and the Mayan, archaeology professor is giving the big tour. Says, "Oh yes, of course they killed blah blah blah." But then you get up here, and there's almost like a cover up going on.
Well, I haven't read Julia's article in a while. It's been a few days, but she does mention, I believe.
Oh, no, she doesn't. No, I'm talking about other people.
But there are other people. I mean, I know there are people out there who try to deny it. What can I say?
You know, but then you got a T-shirt from a big meeting you guys had, and I mean, it's got heart chopping right on the cover with some green demon coming out.
This is straight out of one of the Maya Screenfold books from the Post Classic.
You hold it more that way for the camera, thanks.
How's that?
Yeah, that's pretty good. A little bit lower, more that way. There you go.
All right. Got it?
We do, yes. Thank you.
Okay. Well, this is a scene straight out of one of the Screenfold books from the Post Classic, the books that are called Codices. And it shows an altar with a sacrificial victim bent over it, all tied, hands and feet tied, and his belly torn open, because that's the way they actually got to the heart. They didn't
go to the ribcage, went under.
Right.
Yeah.
They went underneath. And then out of the gaping hole in his chest grows a tree with a bird sitting on it. And that motif is actually found from the pre-classic all the way down through the post-classic. And it's a manifestation of this idea of giving something and getting something.
Well, see, talk about ink blots. To me, that looks like a big green demon. Now I know it's a tree.
Right, it's a tree, exactly. It's probably a ceiba tree, which is one of the most important and dominant trees in the forest there. And that bird, we call him the principal bird deity, he's found throughout Maya history that we are able to document, and the murals, in fact, you made reference to the pre-classic murals that are somewhat copied in the film as they walk through the tunnels. There's a recent discovery of some just amazing pre-classic murals from northeastern Guatemala. The site is called San Bartolo. Anybody that's interested in the Maya should definitely check out San Bartolo. Just Google it, and you'll find some of that stuff.
Were the Aztecs in massive decline when Cortez arrived?
No, they weren't. They were in the process of building their empire. They'd conquered their neighboring people. And
what about the whole civilization itself?
Well, you know, I think that as far as I can tell, you know, you look at the scale on which they practiced human sacrifice, and you look at the concentrations of people, I can't say that they were in a state of environmental decline that's depicted in Apocalypto, because they seem to have it pretty well together as far as I know. but they were also definitely conquering people all over Mexico.
Sure.
And down into Central America.
Before we run out of time, let's go through this in Ucatec.
Okay, well, what I have here is the text of the speech of the high priest. This is the sacrificing priest up on the temple in Apocalypto. And it'll give you some idea of what the rationale is. Now, this isn't taken straight from a Maya document, but I know that there were Maya people and a Maya archaeologist involved in writing this piece of text. I was not involved in writing it, but I was involved in helping the actor pronounce it again when we did the overdubs. But just let me read it, part of it quickly to you in English, and then I'll give you the Yucatec. These are the days of our great lament. The land thirsts. A great plague infests our crops. The scourge of sickness humiliates us at whim. They say this painful thing has made us weak, that we have become empty. They say that we rot. Great people of the banner of the sun, I say we are strong. We are chosen, chosen to be the masters of time. And so this is the beginning of this prayer. Let me just read it to you in Yucatec. Now, he's saying this to the people. There's a throng of thousands of people down below. But he's also saying it to the god. And the god, who's named here in a little bit, is Ukulkan, the feathered serpent. Bechlai ukinilob yahyawato'ob. Ukahluma. Huntul no hoch ikle tun kas kuntik akpak alon. Uhat elikaso tun tonad kunts kon. Hebishuk ate. Kuyalale le yahyah ba loba tun tokik muk holank puksik al. Kuyakobe tank tuta. That means they say we rot. That's what that means. Uno kaha hilan kan. Ten aitone man muk anon. Tone, ye, ya, no, we are the chosen ones. Ton, yumilekino, chosen to be the masters of time.
Now there's also some things in the film, and Mel's even talked about this publicly, that are personal things that happened to him. Like one of the bad guys in the film is somebody he's attacking. He's calling him almost because the star, Jaguar Paw, you know, almost beats him at the first of the film in a fight. So he tells him, you're almost. And then Mel said that was something personal, you know, that somebody had basically beat him up when he was a kid and said almost, or some story with a bully. So there's also an imprint of Mel Gibson kind of personalizing some things into the film as well.
And that's a very common device or expression of storytellers, to put part of their story into the film, unless they're doing a documentary and trying to make it as objectively scientific as possible.
Yeah, sure. The nitpickers, I mean, he just took a lot of real stuff, combined it in, and even put some of his own, you know, life experiences in. What's this next one? I mean, this is a good scene in the movie about not having fear. I like it.
Have we got time to?
Yeah, we got time. Let's do it.
Okay, this is, I did this on Sunday. I'm happy to do it again because it's really my favorite piece of the script. But this is the scene early on when Jaguar Paw and his friends and his father encounter a group of people passing through that part of the forest, and they're obviously on the run. They look terrified, men, women, and children. They've obviously been through some kind of battle, and they're trying to ask permission to pass through that part of the forest. And then as they depart, they've traded some meat for some fish. As they depart, they say, our lands were ravaged, and then they pass on through the forest. Or actually, they say, our lands were ravaged, and then Jaguar Paw comes back with, your lands were ravaged? And they say, yes, we're going to go and, you know, seek a new beginning. And at that point, Jaguar Paw's father calls him back because he does not want him to go ahead and engage these people in this conversation.
And hear about all the scary stuff and then let him
hear about all the scary stuff and then bring it back to the village. So now he gives him this lecture about fear. So he says, and I'll give it to you, I'll give the English interlinearly here. Teche kap el chahanatukul. You are troubled again. Le makop te kasho. Bashta wilatio. Those people in the forest, what did you see on them? Sahki. Fear. Tam kak asahki. Deep, rotting fear. Latiob utsayatiob lelo tawila. They were infected by it. Did you see? Le sahkilo ump el kohanil. Fear is a sickness. Le lela kuyokol tikushtal. It will crawl into the soul. Lelelo, tokanuk askuntik uwet ana ki la kustal. It has tainted your peace already. Tenet matin chui sechu tialin wilech ich sahkili. I did not raise you to see you with fear. Hostapuksika, strike it from your heart. Matasik te chanka halo. Do not bring it into the village. Kensas lake, yank much taliete le bat tabobo, tu kilich kashil akchibalon. At first light, we will gather with the elders at the sacred hill of our fathers. Te lo tone yank paik pishon pishnob utial unukton. There we will call on our spirits to guide us.
Well, I mean, it's important to study human history, because if you don't know it, the old cliche goes, you'll be doomed to repeat it. And then this is a major artery, not a thread, running through human history. And people need to face up to what societies and establishments, i.e. governments, have done. They always become abusive. They always become insane. They always become completely dominating. And our own elite today is doing horrible, evil things right out in the open. But just like Aztecs or Mayans during, you know, this whole period, the general public just accepts it because we've been raised up in it. And that's why I think history itself is important. And I think Mel Gibson has really given us a window into a lot of things that were happening just south of us that most people on this planet, most even Mexicans in Mexico, aren't aware of. We'll come back and quickly talk to Demetrius and Bill with their quick questions on the other side in the final segment.
Year after a year in production and traveling to distant lands, my new film Terror Storm is complete. Shocking declassified government documents prove that Western governments are orchestrating terror attacks against their own populations as a pretext to enslave them. Terror Storm proves that not only was 9/11 an inside job, but the attacks of 7/7 in London were carried out by British intelligence. Terror Storm chronicles the lies that took us to war in Iraq, a White House program to disseminate fake news, NSA spying, secret police torture, the latest 9/11 information, and much, much more. Terror Storm is the definitive guide to the history of government-sponsored terrorism. It's an anthology of government crimes. Terror Storm is a film that everyone who wants to be truly informed must see. Get your copy today at InfoWars.com or PrisonPlanet.com or by calling toll-free 1-888-253-3139 or watch it right now online at PrisonPlanet.tv.
Terrorism, terrorism, chemical attacks, dirty bombs, fallout, biological attack, anthrax, and to top it all off, duct tape and plastic. Alarming words for our time. But how do you protect your family during such a crisis? The video Sheltering in Place, Surviving Acts of Terrorism from Biological, Chemical, and Radioactive Fallout was developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government. Anyone can follow the simple instructions. It's presented by a housewife as they walk you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. If you're not the type who waits till it's too late, then you need the video Sheltering in Place. Get the critical information you need now for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 and tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at murkywater.com.
Hey ladies, if you love to shop, then visit HerbalHealer.com to browse through their online catalog. You'll find thousands of effective, alternative, and natural products for you and the whole family. Besides the amazing products you'll find, this shopping is guilt-free because you're investing in your health, and your health is priceless. While online, sign up to receive the Herbal Healer newsletter, which will keep you informed on the latest and greatest products in education. Did you know that Herbal Healer offers not only natural medicine, but also tension-relieving herbal teas, cookbooks, aromatherapy, products for pampering, and more great products to help you soothe and relax after a long day. Want to learn more for yourself and to help others in the future? Join the Herbal Healer Correspondence Program. You can work at your own pace from the comfort of your own home. This accredited, exciting program can help you gain skills and knowledge. Can you believe you can find all this at one stop? HerbalHealer.com, celebrating 18 years of dedication.
Trust your government. It's good. It's loving. Government wouldn't hurt you. What do you mean? I mean, it's just always government and elites murdering and killing and sacrificing and warring and enslaving. And we're so naive to not think that you know, it's somehow changed today. Demetrius in South Carolina, you're on the air with our guest. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks. I appreciate everything. Alex, I love your show. I just started listening like 3 weeks ago, and everything you say is scary, but I'm glad to hear it because I do believe that our government, you know, doesn't always look out for our best interests. And I kind of had this in the back of my head, but everything you hear makes more sense, especially the 9/11 truth movement. And a lot of people in my community and that I know are real ignorant about it. But regarding anthropology in general, there was a book I read by the author Eric Fromm, and he analyzes, like, the psychological side of politics and just human nature in general. And I would like to ask the doctor, what does she make of, like, different cultures that had killed an animal like a bear or had did sacrifices, but at the same time, after they had performed the sacrifice, they actually did a ritual to, like, kind of honor the animal that they killed as if they were...
Yeah, Dr. McLeod, I mean, specifically, what is the question?
I know that human nature, you know, she says that there's a bloodlust, you know, but is there something, you know, from some studies of ancient cultures that shows that there's also like a side of human nature that really doesn't want to kill and
doesn't
really enjoy it?
Well, obviously there's a side of human nature that doesn't want to. No, thanks for the call.
Yeah, hey, thanks, Demetrius. I see where you're going with that. And my experience with that is mostly from Native American peoples of both North America and Central America. There is this idea that if we have to hunt, and we do, because we are meat eaters, you know, we are biologically programmed to be...
Well, you were saying that earlier.
You know, omnivores.
Sure.
And so we do kill, we do take life. And a lot of the Native American people have a ritual. In fact, the ritual takes place not only after, but before. The ritual begins as the hunt begins. They do a ritual for the hunt.
And then they thank the deer.
And they ask permission to take an animal's life,
sure,
or even to take a tree down.
Sure. We got to move quick. Bill in Ohio, you're on the air, last caller. Go ahead, Bill, quickly.
Bill in Chicago. What about the error correction with about 3 days at the end of the Mayan calendar? And I think it's ironic that it ends a month, or it ends a month before Hillary's term will be up.
Well, I think it's really interesting that it's tied in with the winter solstice, too. I mean, I think that's the most
correct,
interesting part of it. There's actually a two-day correction to the calendar, and it has to do with the way in which the correlation was developed, and it was corrected when people...
But let's be clear, you don't believe things end on 2012,
no,
and
I
the actual
not.
Mayan you know, documents that you've read from the stone shows that they just mean a new cycle begins.
Well, okay. I'm one of the people that's involved in deciphering the phrase from the last time it happened, back in 3113 B.C. So I know what they say there, and they say, will change, or will be changed, the hearth at the mouth of the sky. And I know from other studies of my iconography that
that means culture.
They conceive of the sky as a house, as a deified house, and the hearth is the heart of culture.
Yeah. So people running around saying, even if you believe what the Mayans are saying, and again we don't, you know, it's their religion. It doesn't end in 2012.
No, I mean, it doesn't. Something changes in 2012, but things don't end.
All right, we're out of time. Dr. McLeod, I want to thank you for coming in. Any websites, any things we should check?
Well, MesoWeb, MesoWeb, is a great source for scholars and lay people alike. Just Google it.
You also teach flying lessons here in town.
That's right.
You're
going to
take us up to videotape the Trans-Texas Corridor soon. Tell us where you're at.
I'm based at Bergstrom, the south end of Bergstrom, Atlantic Flight Support, and I'm with the University Flying Club.
All right, so fantastic. Well, listen, thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
That was great. All right, folks, see you back tonight. See you back tomorrow. God bless.
Copies of the preceding broadcast are available at GCNLive.com or call toll-free 877-300-7645.